Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 6th of May, 2017.
June.
Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 6th of June, 2017. Thank you for that, Mike. Just after 1 o'clock, welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson, and we will be joined by live video Skype link by Patrick Henningsen. First of all, I'd just like to say extraordinary weather here in Plymouth yesterday, immense gales, some branches of trees down. It was truly extraordinary for the start of flaming June. What can we say? Global warming.
Well, we can't say
climate that change.
June is the end of May, as everybody is saying at the
June,
moment.
But yes, luckily June is the end of May. You'll have to think about that.
Right. Okay. We're going to start with the election. This tweet was doing the rounds today. Danny Blanchflower retweeted it and so on. Amber Rudd on the case when she comes out of hiding, that is. Now, I think I'm going to say that this is slightly unfair in the sense that her father passed away about a week ago. On the other hand, we have this video clip from Hastings and Rye where she's clearly demonstrating that she's prepared to shut down the speech of an independent candidate. You saw that video, Brian?
We did, yeah. And, well, we come back to the quality of our politicians, but we've consistently seen that they do not want free and open debate if they regard the subject as politically embarrassing. This is the pattern.
But if Amber Rudd is hiding, of course, it was Amber Rudd that within a day or so of her father's passing was thrown out into the national debate on BBC. Because Theresa May wanted to hide. Perhaps that's the bigger story.
Well, June is the end of May.
Yes. But perhaps this is the biggest story, and perhaps this should be no surprise to anybody. This is the Plymouth Herald here. Now, of course, there were plenty of allegations about vote rigging in the 2015 election. But the headline in the Herald is that the postal ballot papers have gone missing in Plymouth. This is no surprise. We heard through the grapevine that in 2015, bags full of postal votes were sitting at a sorting office not too far away from where we are at the moment. And this looks like this time around, people are starting to, or at least looking out for it, and they're starting to complain about it and the media having to cover it. Unspecified number of ballot papers, but hundreds is the number. If this is happening in every constituency, what's the likely outcome?
Well, I think we can simply say that vote rigging is now a pattern of elections in Britain. And while we stand on the international stage and say, well, of course, we are the nation that you should have in your country to make sure that elections are run in a fair, lawful manner, this is complete hypocrisy. We can also say we know in the Plymouth area that some individuals receive letters from the council saying, well, actually, we found your postal vote a mere 2 or 3 weeks after the election, and what would you like us to do with it? So it's quite clear we've got effectively a breakdown, and this means that anybody can be manipulating the elections. Surprising that the Plymouth Herald hasn't claimed it's the Russians, though.
Absolutely. I think one point we could make is, of course, if you're on the electoral roll but don't have an intention to vote, you might consider going to the and collecting your ballot paper and either spoiling it or perhaps removing it from the polling station. And that, of course, means that it can't be used for any kind of vote rigging.
On the basis that it is your vote, of course.
Absolutely. The other piece of news is that Theresa May is bringing back one of the, well, she intends to bring back, if she's voted in, one of the big institutions of the British Empire, the Board of Trade. She's saying that she's going to create a new Board of Trade to help exports and attract foreign investment, apparently. But of course, the original Board of Trade was a committee of the Privy Council set up in 1696, replacing the Lords of Trade and Plantations. And they made sure that colonial laws were not contrary to British interests. They issued the commissions for royal governors, consular service. They oversaw colonial commercial relations and with other nations. So this is Theresa May's latest attempt to implement TTIP and TPP through other means, I suspect?
You've said it there, reinvigorating the empire is the key game going on here. And the moment you mentioned the Privy Council, of course, Mike, this is where the seat of the dirty business is done, behind closed doors and well out of the sight of the public.
Let's bring Patrick Henningsen at this point. Pat, have you any particular observations of the electoral process so far? Don't really want to comment too much on the toing and froing between the various participants because it's mostly nonsense, but the election itself?
My biggest observation of the election so far, this general election, is just all this, the string of terrorist attacks that have happened in just the last few weeks, right in the run-up to the general, and how this is being played with by the media and by politicians in order to gain the upper hand. You've shown this by example on this show many times over the last couple of weeks, but it's very different. Obviously than the U.S. Election cycle, which is effectively 18 months long. So you have a much shorter election cycle here. But what I see happening in this election is I see the conservative government desperately needs to put a stamp of legitimacy on this prime minister, possibly, if she is the one to continue, because she's unelected. She basically came in last year as kind of transition person from David Cameron. So hopefully some questions will be answered after Thursday, but my biggest fear, Mike and Brian, is that there will be more questions after Thursday, no matter what the result is going to be. And I'm talking about Brexit primarily.
Absolutely, because of course the Brexit negotiations start in 10 days' time. Do you believe that?
Well, I've never believed it, hence the pause. But it is interesting, a lot of people saying what is really going on with this election, because is the concern that were Labour to get in, then we're going to be moving back towards the European Union. Is that a possibility? The minimum is confusion. But what, of course, we would say is that Theresa May's fully declared her colours, vote for Theresa and the Conservatives, and the police state will be on your doorstep in next to no time. Any other result gives us time for people to really wake up to what's going on.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, of course, the question remains, how much longer will we have even the veneer of democracy? Because here come the cities. We've been talking about this since Trump decided to leave the Paris Climate Agreement. C40 cities again tweeting out today, cities all over the world glowed green in support of the Paris Agreement. All these monuments, all these public buildings, institutions around the world now with multicoloured lights, lighting systems. I'm not sure who decided to do this on a global basis, Brian, but they all have these multicoloured lighting systems, which means when there's a terrorist attack in one country, we can light it up the appropriate colours.
It's a worldwide theme, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a way of spreading the theme across the world.
Absolutely. So they've decided to light everything up green in support of the Paris Climate Agreement.
Can we just add into there, somebody in our chat room has correctly said, isn't this a waste of electricity? Doesn't this contribute to climate change and global warming? I find that a very interesting comment, because I can remember when the lighting of the city was debated in Plymouth at the exact time when energy efficiency and cutting back on wasteful electricity consumption was also being discussed. The lighting won out, so presumably the importance of getting that themed message across was being seen back then.
Absolutely, or perhaps global warming is simply a fraud. But let's keep going, because this follows up on it, because Apple, Google, Autodesk, other big businesses have also agreed to uphold the climate agreement, the Paris Climate Agreement. So this is largest corporations, universities are joining cities in what they're describing as coordinated climate action, a broad coalition of leaders from businesses, universities and cities. What are we looking at here? We're looking at the subversion of national sovereignty. Is that what we're looking at? that a fair
removal of it in due course, but at the moment we're subverting it. Yeah, but of course, nation states are to go. Any form of proper sovereignty is to go. We are simply to be people in the new global arena.
But this is corporatism, Pat.
Yes, this is corporatism. You could say that the Silicon Valley, the heads of those firms, those companies are the sort of culture makers of the 21st century. So they're really driving the cultural agenda. Certainly Google is front and center on a lot of these efforts. They're front and center on color revolutions as well. But this is also, it mirrors the Clinton coalition as well. The Clinton coalition being this exact same demographic. The sort of classical neoliberal and progressive liberals, cities, urban demographics, and the green, the climate change movement, or whatever we want to call it. So that is the Clinton coalition, essentially, that exact demographic. This is an internationalized political coalition. It's not just confined to the United States. It's now officially internationalized. So this is what any nation state is going to run up against, this international virtual political coalition, which crosses all borders and permeates everything and uses social media as its main conduit for propagating its messaging and agenda.
But what's slightly different from the situation under Clinton is that they're describing that they will take individual action, or they're going to take a group action, but they're taking it as a completely separate group outside the political process. They're saying that there's a lack of political leadership, and therefore they're wanting to sideline the current political institutions, the democratic political institutions. We might be cynical about those, but this is something quite different and ultimately significantly more dangerous.
It's not theoretical. What you're saying is practically happening right now in America. This is being tested legally through the sanctuary cities, where cities and mayors like Rahm Emanuel in Chicago or Bill de Blasio in New York City are defying federal immigration laws by declaring their cities sanctuary cities for illegal immigrants or aliens. So that's actually going to be tested legally. It could go as high as the Supreme Court in the next year or two. This is actually being tested right now. The results of this will be very interesting. But the battle has begun, Mike. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's move on to the London Bridge and what continues to be in the media. Now, yesterday we were covering the fact that one of the so-called jihadis had taken part in a Channel 4 documentary called The Jihadis Next Door. And here is the search for that on a particular search engine, and as you can see, the Channel 4 documentary appears at the top of the list. Well, when you click on the link, what happened to it? Initially what happened was technical issues. This is what happened yesterday. Technical issues, were working on it, there was an error, and they had a nice picture of the IT crowd, I believe that is, or something, so just a technical problem, but not today. Today we have something quite different. If you look at that same page, we have this. Cheer up, it's not the end of the world, page not found. And Patrick, what is this that we're looking at?
The choice of image, leave that image up there on screen. The choice of image, which was chosen, possibly produced by Channel 4 here. I don't know if this is from one of their productions or this is a photo shoot with a little Photoshop job, which they've had custom done for this particular function here. What this is a one-eyed person. And so you have to understand the video which they are covering up is a documentary produced last year, released by Channel 4, called The Jihadist Next Door, which features one of the known wolves who was involved apparently in this London and Bridge terrorist attack a few days ago. So Channel 4 is feverishly going around apparently, we're told around YouTube, trying to sanitize the internet on copyright claims to get this video basically down from YouTube from different channels. Okay, what are they trying to hide here? Well, clearly you've got a suspected terrorist involved in the London Bridge attacks in the Channel 4 video, and we inquired yesterday on this show. You know, who is Channel 4 working with to cast the actors for that documentary? Who is their middleman? Are they working with the security services or the police? We were just asking that question. But this image, if you put this back up, this could easily be translated or interpreted as the one-eyed Antichrist, the Dajjal. And this is from Islamic eschatology. And there's many different interpretations of this, what it means, like who will be the Antichrist, what camp will he be from. But this is universal in most Islamic eschatology. Probably an Islamic scholar would be better qualified to comment on this than me, but because sometimes groups are cherry picking. So ISIS, for instance, would cherry pick and reinterpret this as the Dajjal's army, or Sufyani would be this character. His army would be Shiites. So this is why they call the Shiites the infidels. They think that they're working for the devil. So like in Christianity, we have many interpretations of Christian literature and scripture, the same in Islam. Okay, so, but this is kind of a really, almost a sick joke by Channel 4, but it's also an incitement, because they're using this to incite a very specific end times narrative in radical Islamic factions. And so the use of that image is no coincidence, Mike, and it's actually it's more than slightly disturbing. It borderlines on the deranged, but it's almost like Channel 4 is quietly playing a clever joke to incite either radical Muslims or people who are genuinely looking at connections with them and these cells. And they're playing a joke saying, ha ha ha, you know, don't worry, the end times it hasn't happened yet. So, but you're playing with the Mahdi, the Imam al-Mahdi, and the Dajjal system, which is the Antichrist, the one-eyed Antichrist. They're playing with this narrative here. This is kind of disturbing, and I'd like Channel 4 to explain themselves.
If I can just respond to a bit of that, Pat, what comes into my mind is the fact that people in the Muslim community are warning at the moment of a rise of evil in the world. So they're pointing out to the events with the wars, the terror, the torture, which we'll come on to later. But they're specifically saying that this is part of an evil doctrine which is spreading. And I'm going to say I find this very, very interesting, when at the same time we have a complete silence from our Christian churches, who simply do not want to comment on this type of issue. So the church at the moment mixing with the bankers, not speaking out on the wars, not talking about the torture which the British government's indulged in. And I would agree with you that it seems almost here that Channel 4 is attempting to create more tension by mocking. This is a form of putting out an image to mock the very people actually that are now pointing a finger to say, well, what we're seeing is a very dark, evil agenda coming through politics worldwide.
It could easily be interpreted as that, Brian. I think you're right on there. You know, we had Reverend Andrew Ashdown from the Anglican Church on the Sunday Wire radio show this past Sunday. It was a fantastic discussion. But he even said, you know, he has run up against a lot of hostile forces within the church because of his stance and him traveling to Syria to meet other faith leaders and to basically give a different narrative about what's going on in the Middle East and a different take on the sectarian narrative that the West is pushing. Andrew Ashdown, the Reverend, has come up with a lot of resistance for that and has been targeted and, you know, defamed or, you know, insulted or slandered by other people, forces within the church, not happy at all with what he's pushing out there. So I think, Brian, this is just down to a lack of leadership in the church. And this is the church, instead of going to meet the crisis, this is the church shriveling away and disengaging with what traditionally would be one of its responsibilities, is to provide some leadership in the faith and spiritual, and even where these cross over into politics, the church has a role there traditionally to play, but not anymore.
Indeed. And as you said, Patrick, Channel 4 beginning to block other instances of this documentary. So they've decided to take it down off their own website. And as you can see, the Jihadist Deck Next Door, which is on somebody else's YouTube channel here, it had reached 1.3 million views. So they were quite happy to have it up there for quite some time. And then now that they've decided to take it down because one of the people featured in it is allegedly has taken part in a terrorist attack, they've decided to take it down and to take it down from everywhere. They're censoring it off the internet completely. What could they possibly be embarrassed about, Brian?
I think they've been caught out. What's actually happening on the internet now is that people are using common sense and normal intelligence to look at what they're being told, and slowly but surely, of course, they're dismantling the propaganda which is coming out of the respective governments and their national media channels, BBC, Channel 4, all the same sort of thing.
And in the meantime, Patrick, the Telegraph headline here is police uncover YouTube linked to London terror attack. So what are we saying, that YouTube is the breeding ground for terrorism?
That's what the headline is inferring. And of course, when you read the story, like most of these mainstream media stories, when you actually read down through the article, you'll see that it bears little resemblance to the impression which is inferred by the headline. By definition, this is basic propaganda, but this is the sort of practice that the mainstream media engages in on a daily basis. All major publications do the same. Maybe it's clickbait. Maybe the Telegraph want to pull some clicks in to drive ad revenue. But I think it's much worse than that, Mike. I think what they're doing here is signaling that there will be some sort of control or censorship over YouTube by the state, or some voluntary measures where the state or Bilderberg or whatever transnational coalition will then put pressure on Google to sort of adopt a tougher self-policing regiment of censorship on YouTube under the guise of fighting extremism or fighting terrorism, whatever. But if it's fighting extremism, it'll most likely be extended to hateful speech or disturbing speech or something like this. So we'll see.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the subject of the police and how many bullets the police fired, because I did have several people who contacted me as a result of what we said yesterday. And so I thought it was reasonable to put up this, which I thought was a particularly concise comment. I'll read it out. It says, so this was an email sent into the UK column. Dear Brian, I've heard on UK column several comments regarding the above, and this is the shoot to kill policy. As a former warrant officer in the regular army and commissioned officer in the territorial army involved in military training, I would like to make some observations. In the army, and as far as I'm aware, the police also, you're taught to aim at the centre of the visible mass of the target. The notion that you can aim to wound is a fantasy dreamed up in Hollywood. There has never been a policy of shoot to kill. All skill at arms training is directed to ensure an accurate aim shot to the centre of the target. The reason the phrase shoot to kill has been bandied about over the years is probably due to the fact that from the 1970s, the title of the first skill at arms training pamphlet was Infantry Training Skill at Arms, Volume 1, Pamphlet Number 1, Shoot to Kill. This detailed the procedure for instructors to use when teaching recruits. As a long-time devotee of your efforts, the UK column, I hope this information will clarify some points. Please feel free to contact me. Well, that was a very informative email sent in, and I absolutely take the point. But we have an issue arising here because, of course, we now have armed police on the streets. As we're being told here, when those police shoot, they are going to shoot to kill, and they are now killing people. But of course, they're also firing enough rounds to hit innocent bystanders. And this is one of the key points that I was trying to push across yesterday. I used an emotive expression that they were spraying bullets. 50 bullets were fired, according to the police. Were those evenly distributed across the 8 police officers? We don't know. Or did we have one man unleashing automatic fire? I don't know the answer to that. But of course, the point is that our police have now changed to be armed on Britain's streets. And if they fire, they're going to be shooting to kill, and we now understand why. So if we put some of this into context, let's just remind ourselves how Britain's police have changed. So we have the original white-shirted officers here, and I think I'm old enough to remember back to policemen who would approach the public overwhelmingly with a friendly and certainly a respectful manner, even though, of course, they had a tough job to do. And without any proper debate, where have we gone? Well, we are now gone to through the process of black-shirted police introducing McDonald's baseball caps as part of the image, festooned with batons and handcuffs as well. And of course, ultimately, we've now got to these paramilitary police who don't even show their face. Many of them don't appear to have numbers on their uniform. Who are they? Are they police? Are they private security individuals? We don't know. This is the path that Britain's police have been taken. This is not accidental. We now have paramilitary police on the streets who are shooting and are killing people, but they're also killing bystanders. So is that poor weapons drill? Are these people not able to shoot properly, or are they too casual in firing their weapons? So my point in the news yesterday, and indeed the news today, is to get people to think about the real situation that we now have these paramilitary police on the streets. Did we vote for this situation? Patrick, just very briefly, of course, in America, we've now got to the stage from the reports we see that American police are shooting members of the American public in some really appalling circumstances, people in wheelchairs, women who've just been pulled up in their cars, and it almost seems as though the police take a dislike to them. You are used to that in America. We are now starting to see that sort of policing philosophy occur here, largely as the result of Theresa May as Home Secretary.
Well, the situation in America with regards to police, arguably the police are a bit more hyped up or high strung in America because they don't know if the public who they're interfacing with or dealing with are armed as well. So one could argue that that's one of the reasons why police, and if you go to their training, they really pump it into their heads as they do here probably. You don't know what the other side has and you have to be prepared for everything. But let's just put this in the context of a terrorist attack, because that's what we're talking about as we're framing this conversation. The reason the police have been militarized, we're told, is because of the terrorist threat, right? So if you look at the Orlando nightclub, Pulse nightclub shooting, which happened last year in Florida, there was a hail of bullets with dozens of police officers used a battering truck to take out the back wall of the nightclub because they claimed they couldn't get in through the two or three doors available. They took out the back wall, and then a hail of bullets, over 300 and maybe about 350, 360 rounds in the space of a few seconds. And then we see reports afterwards that there are 50 dead nightclub goers. Okay, nobody knows quite what the official story really is. And this has been questioned in the media as well, even in the mainstream media, after the Orlando shooting event. So that involved apparently a gunman that was an actor and a G4S employee and other things. And so we're told he killed the 50 people in the nightclub. And then it became murky afterwards and questions had begun to arise. Did the police, how many of these people did the police kill? So again, in the confusion of having so many armed officers all hyped up against what they think is a terrorist threat or a suicide bomber or fake suicide bombing vests, as which was introduced bizarrely in London Bridge, then the confusion, the potential for confusion and the potential for hitting a member of the public just increases. So with all the noise and the screaming and the action. So that would be my biggest worry, is that in their training simulations and everything, they are really hyping this up and overblowing what they might be looking at. And so they're just in there all guns blazing like they're going into Baghdad. This is, I think, the impression that they want to have these private security people or their day hires on £1,500 a day, whatever, whoever these people are, whether they're staffers or their ex SAS who are on contract per day. I don't know, but they're really putting out this, I think, in the training and simulations, which we witnessed one of them, by the way, last year, as to what this sort of the nature of the threat is, really. So a lot of questions here.
A lot of questions, and if we're asking those questions, then we're doing the right thing, because we ask enough questions, we're going to be working to bring the truth up to the surface. But let's remember, this woman is running the Met Police. Her history is of accidental death, I think we've got to call it. But an innocent man was shot under her watch. Common purpose leader, now promoted to run the Met Police. No experience of this kind of role before. So very dangerous woman, in my opinion. But an innocent man got shot. Just a little problem. Move on. Not important. But we found this today, which we are fascinated at. This is Cressida Dick talking to the Leveson Inquiry. And she had this to say: terrorist activity almost always attracts international media attention as well as local and national interest. So it's important to think carefully about how to handle this. It's also critical to avoid any potential glamorizing or dignifying of terrorists through media coverage. It is helpful, for instance, simply to refer repeatedly to terrorists as criminals, which is all they are, and their actions as criminal activity. So she said back then to Leveson that we should call it...
She doesn't seem to be taking her own advice.
Well, I thought we'd just pop that on screen, because if we look at what Cressida Dick is doing at the moment, she is ramping up terror training, terror. So to Leveson, when it's working to censor the press, no, we've got to call it criminal activity. But now she's in post, all she's speaking about is terror. And if we just follow through on this line, we picked out another bit of this report. She says here that basically she's saying in paragraph 13, I was superintendent operations and area commander at Oxford between 1995 and 2000. I attended a common purpose training course in 1995 alongside the editor of the Oxford Mail. The course was designed to increase participants' understanding of other organisations and sectors in the city. I began to understand more of what the media were interested in and how they worked and what their constraints were. So this was a pretty cosy little relationship, Mike. And what we're seeing here, of course, is a breakdown in separation of powers, because she was meeting with the media behind closed doors.
Absolutely.
And just end on this lovely photograph of this. What does she have to say? She's also said this: we in this country have faced a terrorist threat throughout my life. It changed and morphed, and we will change and adapt to what appears to be a new reality for us. Now, I find that very, very interesting language, that Cressida Dick is living in, I beg your pardon, a bit of a Freudian slip there.
It's easy to confuse them.
Yeah, I've confused the month. I'm confusing the Prime Minister with Cressida Dick. How could I do that? Well, basically, she is a common purpose guru. She's now saying that she's in a new reality. And I think that that is absolutely correct.
What's next? A black screen?
A black screen. Well, we better come on to this one, which is, of course, let us not forget, in the route to change the police, we had the bringing in of tasers. And if you try and have a look at the statistics of how many people have been killed by tasers, there's not a lot of direct information. But we did find Amber Rudd here. And she's saying that a small number of deaths and serious injuries have occurred as a result of tasers. So same logic, nothing to worry about. A few people have been killed. One man was burnt to death as a result of a taser incident in Plymouth. It's only a small number, Mike. Nothing really to worry about.
And that's going to be the same logic for full arms.
Full armed police, yeah. If a few people die, it doesn't really matter, because we've got to protect the state. I think I've heard that somewhere else.
It's interesting. Today, the George Orwell Foundation is giving a live reading in London of 1984. They're going to read it from cover to cover, and it's going to be streamed out. And the son of George Orwell was on Radio 4 this morning And he was asked, why are you doing this? And his response was, because he said, you've got to look, you've got to understand what you're saying at the moment. You've got to look behind the language and realize that you're being gently brought into a police state. The BBC presenter wasn't terribly impressed with that, but I thought it was quite interesting that the son of George Orwell was offering that warning this morning.
And well, he should.
Yeah. So let's come on to a couple of ads. Media on Trial, Frome Stop War, running this event on Sunday the 11th. That's this coming Sunday, 7 p.m. in the Cheese and Grain in Frome. Patrick Henningsen, Vanessa Bailey, Piers Robinson, Robert Stewart, Tim Hayward and Peter Ford speaking. Looking forward to that event. I hope to see as many people there as possible. And then on the 8th of June, which is on Thursday, at 6 p.m. on the Five Ways in Birmingham, Mortgage Compensation Seminar, cimevents.co.uk for more on that. And they're looking to sort of make the securitisation of mortgages equivalent to PPI, get some publicity over this and get something done about the securitisation of mortgages problem.
Excellent. Well, I'll just pop this one in as the lead into another ad. We've got Hugh Pym from the BBC says, wet weather hasn't dampened spirits at BBC Breakfast, BBC Five Live. They're debating election issues. I am joining health, social care discussion. Well, we're reporting some pretty serious things today, but we've also recently put up this audio interview, Mechanics of Modern Murder Part 1, talking about some very, very dark things going on inside the NHS. And if you haven't heard it, there's the link at the top of the screen. Log on and listen to that audio. There's a lot more information to come on this subject because we are being told a lot by people who are deeply concerned inside the NHS. And this is clearly not in the understanding of the BBC at the moment because they're busy having little breakfast discussions. So if you haven't heard it, Mechanics of Modern Murder.
So media, censorship, terrorism. Of course, terrorism being used to drive censorship of the media and particularly of social media, at least put some pressure on that. And of course, who do they roll out? This is the BBC today, BBC Click, rolling out Stephen Fry to give comment on this. And he was talking about that he was being asked whether Facebook should be considered a publisher. He believes it should be. He said if people are getting a huge proportion of their news from Facebook, it should be incumbent on Facebook to make sure that the news is not defamatory and other things. And Patrick, this is a really spectacular direction to be taking because what he's therefore saying is that Facebook is responsible for the views of the people that use Facebook. And surely the people that use Facebook are entitled to have their own views, are entitled to have responsibility for their own views. And if they make a defamatory comment, there's already law in place to deal with that.
Yeah, I can't, you know, who does Stephen Fry think he is? Just because he was the first celebrity to munt his way onto Twitter, that he still believes that he's some sort of voice for the 21st century on technological affairs. But Facebook is a social media platform. It's a social network, and it was built by its users. Facebook would be nothing. Its IPO, its share prices, its capitalization as a business, as a international, transnational, multinational company would be nothing if not for its social network, its user base. Those are the people that give it value. Those are the people that define Facebook. And so it is not a publisher like the Times.co.uk or like the Guardian.com. It is not the same thing. I beg to differ with Stephen Fry. And on top of that, there are libel laws and defamation laws already on the books. There is a system already in place to tackle that. So again, this is a celebrity. This reminds me, Mike and Brian, you should comment here. Does this not remind us of the sort of the Leveson rhetoric? We have celebrities pushing some sort of a agenda, almost like encouraging or carrying water for the state to increase regulatory powers. Is this not what we're looking at here?
Thank you very much for that, Patrick, because that's exactly what we're looking at here. And in parallel with Stephen Fry's comments, the Hacked Off campaign is using its own twist of reality here to promote Leveson 2. So they're saying Tory government promised to stop the close relationships between press and media, but look at them now, Leveson Part 2 needed. Now, what they're attempting to say here is that they give a couple of examples of Theresa May holding private meetings with media editors. So in this case, it's Paul Dacre. And the next example, they had Theresa May having a private meeting with Rupert Murdoch. And those things are perhaps not the best situation, but it doesn't. But the point of Leveson 2 was not to deal with relationships between the press and politicians. It was to deal with relationships between the press and the police and the media paying for stories from the police. So this is kind of a twist on reality here. This isn't what Leveson 2 was about, but they're attempting to keep this pressure on, to keep to lock down mainstream media in this country. And Patrick, there's lots we can say to criticise the mainstream media, because we criticise them justifiably, I believe, for carrying too much of the government's narrative without questioning the government's narrative. But if we think it's bad now, if we get to the position where the type of control that Hacked Off envisages of the media, if we get to that point in time, we're in real trouble.
Yeah, and I think people need to wake up and realize that so many of these challenges and things that are being used to sort of hamstring the free press, that news corporation companies seem to be involved in almost every single one of some of these. In America, we had similar situations with the Aurora Theater, and I believe her name was Winter. Her first name escapes me, but she was working for a Fox publication or something, or a News Corp publication. Here in the UK, it was News of the World. And so we have the tabloids that are involved. So again, Murdoch is in the center of this. But I just want to say back to Stephen Fry, I think it's ironic that Stephen Fry appeared in that film V for Vendetta, which was one of the sort of the great sort of signaling films about warning about a dystopian future. And so here we have Stephen Fry, who is absolutely playing the role of gatekeeper for the establishment. I think it's kind of ironic considering some of the artistic endeavors he's had in the past.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I don't know if you've noticed this, but just about every mainstream media outlet at the moment is pushing this image. And the headline in The Guardian here is Lawnmower Man, Canadian cuts lawn as tornado looms, and the photo goes viral. And everybody, all the mainstream outlets commenting on this. And I just, well, two points here. First of all, I don't think it's a real image. It could be a real image, but it doesn't look like a real image to me. I think it's photoshopped. I think, although Adobe don't like us calling it that. But anyway, but the point here is, I think this is a pretty strong message being sent, Brian, because they're really hitting the point that people are just getting on with their daily lives while the tornado is creeping up behind them, and they're not paying attention to it. And this hints back at what Orwell's son was saying on the radio this morning. People need to start looking behind them at what's coming.
And also looking at images presented and understanding what's being suggested in the image, which is often deeper than the cursory opinion would give.
Absolutely. So let's talk about one particular image, Patrick. Omran, Dusty Boy on the left there. Yesterday, quite a number of mainstream news outlets from the Middle East, from Lebanon and other Middle Eastern countries. Omran's father has broken his silence on this, and they've been covering this. Even The Guardian today and other mainstream British outlets having to sort of ruefully acknowledge that Omran and his family absolutely support Bashar al-Assad and were effectively used in this image. And of course, this image winning the top prize for these type of photojournalistic images. At the bottom of it is total fraud.
Yeah, so this was an image that nobody could forget, which was on the front page of every newspaper and all over every network, news network last August 2016. This is little Omran Dakhnish. So he's turned up recently. So His father is speaking to the press, and he didn't comment specifically on this photo, but he did acknowledge that he has been bribed and that all of the media is a hoax, he said. This is a rough translation from Arabic. So that's little Omran, Dusty Boy. And that photo that won the Getty Images Photojournalism, International Photojournalism of the Year, they even made a caveat saying that it doesn't matter if it was staged. What matters is the effect. And so the same with your lawnmower man. It doesn't matter if it's photoshopped. All that matters is the effect. And so we seem to be moving in this direction as a culture and society. And the press is none the wiser. They'll just print it anyway. Whatever appears on the editorial desk, if it's going to generate hits, it's going straight out, no questions asked. And this has been the story with the whole of the Syrian conflict.
Absolutely.
And that's an excellent introduction into this. So let's bring Michael Fallon on screen. Fallon speaking out recently about events in Mosul, congratulating Iraqi forces and Peshmerga on their role they've played in allowing the people of Mosul back to their homes to live in freedom again. So this is the sort of rhetoric coming out of Michael Fallon. I've said he's part of the War Department. I think that's absolutely correct. This man is not to do with any Ministry of Defence. He's part of a Department for War. So he's saying that basically we've got peace and freedom back in Mosul, but it's taken Russia today to print some pretty appalling and graphic images of torture now taking place, which Russia today is saying Iraqi forces are now unleashing whatever we call it, retribution on those suspected of being so-called freedom fighters. But this is very, very unpleasant stuff. But Mr. Fallon seems to think that this is Mosul back to normal life. Well, let's remind ourselves that it doesn't have to be Michael Fallon. This is back to Tony Blair and Jack Straw. The unanswered question, what did Blair and Straw know about CIA torture? This was General Barry McCaffrey, who was saying, we tortured people unmercifully. We probably murdered dozens of them during the course of that, both the armed forces and the CIA. Nobody needs this Senate report to demonstrate that the US government became an official squad of torture with the American public largely on board. And it then goes on, however, intelligence sources who spoke to the Telegraph earlier this year alleged that both Mr. Blair and Mr. Straw knew in detail about the CIA's secret program after the September 11 attacks and were kept informed of that torture, quote, every step of the way. So this is why we need a proper free press, whether it's to be done by amateurs over the internet. We need the truth to come out about what these politicians have really been up to. And if we think about the election, I decided that a letter from 2010 would be appropriate. So while Blair and Straw were engaged in the probable cover-up of torture as a minimum, this was the sort of thing we had local MPs involved in. So it's a letter from Alison Seebeck. She'd been asked questions about Britain's membership of the European Union and about the dangers of European legislation coming in. But in her reply, she says that one of the most recent directives soon to be implemented, for example, is the ban of battery hen farming, which is one of the strongest campaigns I've received from my constituents in my time as MP. So whilst we had war fermented by the US and British governments, we had local MPs simply saying that the problem was really battery hens.
Yes, now we're just about out of time, but I just want to cover this because we were supposed to do it yesterday and didn't get a chance, so we'll not leave it till tomorrow. Because over the week, or at the end of last week, was the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. I'm sure many people have seen the interview with Megyn Kelly and President Putin at the plenary session here, where she was asking about Trump and Trump's collusion with Russia. And he basically said, was she hysterical? Did she need medication? Did she want a pill? It was a spectacular response to him. He absolutely tore strips off her. But how was that reported in the mainstream press? Putin put on spot over Russia and Trump. That was the headline.
Yeah.
Nothing about what he actually said. But also at that St. Petersburg, we should say at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, I believe there were several thousand people attended that and 1,000 Chinese delegates at that. It was an absolutely huge event and quite a number of deals done at it. But one of the things that was that took place there was a meeting with heads of international news agencies. Putin really challenging the mainstream media about their coverage of Russia and particularly about the allegations of Russian threat and Russian Russia sort of pushing themselves on other countries like Ukraine, for example, Russian aggression. Putin said, well, first, concerning the military buildup in the Russian Far East and on the islands in particular, this was not Russia's initiative. The same applies to the situation in Europe. NATO bases are coming ever closer to our Western borders. Infrastructure creeps closer and contingencies are being beefed up. What are we to do in this situation? Are we to watch on idly? No, we cannot and we will not. We're taking the appropriate responses. The same is happening in the East. One aircraft carrier sailed into the region, then a second aircraft carrier arrived, and there were reports of a third heading for the region now. This is not the end of the world. Aircraft carriers come and leave again, but components of a missile defense system are being installed as well, and this is a great concern, which we have spoken about for the last decade because it destroys the strategic balance in the world. And he was criticizing the way that this is being reported by the mainstream press. But Patrick, just as a final comment here, Putin continues to be balanced and patient, and he's making it clear where he intends to go and what his concerns are. But he is not presenting the world with the type of rhetoric that we're seeing from quite a number of Western leaders.
Yeah, I think the underestimation that the mainstream media has made all throughout the last few years, especially in the U.S. election cycle, by using Russia as a scapegoat for everything. I don't think the people in the media or the liberal progressive bloc, the Hillary supporters, the international liberal community who are blaming everything on Russia, they don't realize that by still clinging to this idea that Russia somehow influenced or hacked the U.S. election results, they don't realize this is the clock striking 13. This is the 13th stroke. And it pretty much, discredits everything that the mainstream media has done before that and will do after that. And they're really digging their own grave in that sense. So still some people in denial. They don't realize what they're doing. They're really discrediting themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll end on the subject of the election. I have to say I found this little poster on my way into work the other morning. I couldn't resist taking a photograph of it. It's Gary Streeter, Southwest Devon MP. He says he's standing with Theresa May.
Well, hopefully he's falling with Theresa May as well.
Well, I luckily had a little bit of wood and a banner in my car, so I thought this is really what we should post. And I've said there very clearly that if you want to enter Theresa May's police state, then simply vote for Gary Streeter, because if you vote Gary Streeter, you are going to get, in my opinion, one of the most dangerous politicians this country has seen since the Second World War. And we know what type of state Theresa May is planning. Yeah. So if you want to stop her, do not vote for her. Preferably vote for another party to get that tactical vote in place. Others might have different opinions.
Before we go, just a quick reminder, Ian Crane on the live stream at 3 p.m. with the second election special from Humanity versus Insanity.
Yeah, thank you for that. And just to make sure there's no misunderstanding about the month, make June the end of May. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.